Hello, welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. This is a space where searching, hurting, faithful, curious people come together and ask hard questions and listen to wise guests share how they have lived life deeply. There are a couple of things that you can do that really help out the show. One of them is if this episode is something that blesses you, can you please send it to a friend? Another thing is that if you really liked it, then could you please leave a 5-star review and write something nice? You can follow along at YouTube/Allison Sullivan for some really fun extras. Find me on Instagram at Allison M. Sully and TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. Thanks for being here. I hope you hear something today that lets you know you are loved and helps you love one another. Welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. I went on a much needed retreat recently. And a priest at the retreat, he pointed out that everything heavy and dramatic happened in Jerusalem, and everything peaceful and restorative happened in Galilee. Go to Galilee, he said. I'll meet you there. I recently received an ADHD diagnosis after a mental breakdown. I don't trust anyone, by the way, who hasn't had some sort of mental breakdown. I'm not saying everyone needs to write about it or post about it, but if you haven't at one point in your life committed to only three things, White Claw, Oreos, double stuffed, duh, and sweatpants, are you even paying attention? My mental breakdown happened to be in 2020, maybe 2021, but you get the idea. And I do hate that my plummet was predictably during cultural upheaval and racial divide and political unrest and global pandemic. Please, hate being predictable. But grief, it was this newcomer, it was an outsider, and it was something that I didn't recognize. My self-diagnosis was that I was overly sensitive and, in general, difficult. My actual diagnosis was ADHD. Who knew? Y'all are like everyone, hun. And there was a whole lot of blame and shame and sweatpants. I'm afraid the sweatpants are here to stay. And for the other, I'm skill building and taking Adderall. I don't have a lot of advice. I actually try not to give it, even when I feel strongly about something. But I was shocked how that at 45, I could learn something about myself, something so fundamental to how I operated in this world. Was anyone else brought up to believe in some sort of final arrival, some permanent place of full understanding? Because I think I thought that even though life was hard, because trips to Jerusalem are sometimes unavoidable, necessary even, at least there was going to be some blessed assurance. There was going to be some area of interest where we could actually claim some expertise. There were going to be some topics of study where we could actually have all of the information. It was disorienting to learn something so defining so late in life. So who do I blame for this idea that I would one day be able to wipe my hands of learning or growing or changing or evolving? Healing. Disney? My parents? Teachers? Preachers? Me? I don't know. I think maybe I missed some fine print and, as it turns out, missing details, forgetting components, and misplacing my keys. It isn't my whimsy. It's my ADHD. Turbulent times. The turbulent times, it made me feel like God's love was more theoretical than anything else. Good in theory, but impossible in practice. In my ADHD, it made me feel like there weren't any good answers for the ways that I felt confused. And I wasn't even sure I could follow a God who confused me. And grief, overwhelming grief, it made me feel like I was weak for being sad about it all. But while on retreat in Galilee, if you will, I read something familiar, but I heard something new. When Mary Magdalene raced to the tomb, and when she found it empty, she grieved. She grieved longer than her friends did. They went home, it says, but she stayed, and she wept. And I never wondered what was wrong with Mary Magdalene for weeping. It all seemed pretty justified. Her strong emotion pointing out what was undeniably wrong. I never questioned her sanity or resiliency or capacity or morality. I looked on and I wept with her. And then I cheered when it was her that he revealed himself to, her he told to go. What Mary thought was the end, it was a new beginning. She met a Jesus that she didn't recognize, but he called her by name, and he insisted that she be willing to live into her questions with a heart posture of discovery. Do not cling, he says, do not cling to what feels comfortable, what you've always known. Do not cling. Because a dark night can become a new dawn, a tragic end, a new day. There are unresolved questions in my heart. I look at Mary Magdalene's obedience and I live with them. No blessed assurance at all, no final arrival, except that it was her he revealed himself to, her he told to go. The weepy one, the sad one, the confused one. This work, it's just beginning. There are new diagnoses to figure out and manage, wounds to tend to, the ones I've given and received, healthy practices to finally put in place. All in all, grief, it points us to something true and wrong, but joy, it points us to something true and right. And I'm seeing both a little clearer for my time away in Galilee. Today's guest is Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart. She's an expert in so many things. Child psychologist, today we're meeting to talk about ADHD. You'll love this conversation. Hello, Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart. I am so excited that you're here because you are a fan favorite. You're also a host favorite. You're also a producer favorite. So just a favorite all the way around. You are a pediatric psychologist, a parent coach, author, speaker, mom, business owner, internet sensation, Good Morning America favorite as well. We should include them on the list. Just Center Saint Sister hero in general. This is your second time on the show. And truthfully, that doesn't happen all that often because there are so many wonderful people to celebrate and accentuate their work. But this is your second time. And I'm so grateful. Your episode about teens was wildly celebrated and shared and passed around among friends and parents. And that just speaks to how sorely we need mentorship around possibly the most important thing that we're doing, which is raising children. You have nurturing wisdom. You have calm leadership. You have non-judgmental advice. And it's a balm. And it's such a joy to have you back. Welcome to the show.
What a fantastic introduction, Allison. Thank you so much. Thank you. That is so sweet and so kind of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, if you could, if that's your professional introduction, I would love for you to give us a little more of a personal introduction by telling us a little bit about who and what you love.
So I, I've been married for 25 years.
Congratulations.
And I have, thank you. And I have two kiddos. I have a 13-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son. And personally, I was born and raised on the island of St. Croix in the Virgin Islands in the Caribbean. And so what I love would, it's kind of maybe multifaceted. So I love food, really good food. And I love fashion and I love movies. I love anything dealing with creativity. And I'm such a big movie fan. So my kids have inherited that from our exposure. So that's probably the what of what I love and who I love. I really love my husband. I really love my kids. I love the joy that they bring in the midst of all the other stuff that they bring as well too. But I really love just feeding and pouring into them and teaching them stuff. And it's so fun seeing kids discover new things, new meanings of words. And just, I love that. I just really, really love that. So yeah, that's probably me in a nutshell for the personal piece.
I love it. Every time. Last time I asked you this question, I remember just wanting to lean in and be like, we should be friends. And I don't even remember what your answer was, but I remember connecting to it. And so similarly, I actually just this morning told my kids on the way to school, I was joking, but I was lamenting, why do you guys have to go to school? Why do y'all have to be smart? Why can't you just stay home with me and we can watch movies? Because it's a rainy day and I just want a giant family bed where we all cuddle up and learn about life through movies. Yes.
Love it.
Okay, Dr. Lockhart, it is hard to be human. It is really, really hard. And I feel like a lot of times we're always trying to put this cap on humanity, you know, to just kind of, I don't know, like take life and make it less lifey, you know, minimize the parts that hurt or that are dramatic. And there are so many things, even though life is hard, there are so many things that make it harder, whether it's poverty or systemic racism or trauma or loss or grief, political turmoil, difficult relationships. There are so many things that we're up against. We could go on and on. And then there are also the diagnoses we carry. There are ways that our brains might not be working properly. There's dysregulation that we're trying to manage. And so many ways that our brains like aren't necessarily cooperating with what's required of us in life. And as I just mentioned before we started recording, it was at the 45 years young that I learned that I had ADHD. And for 45 years, to me, it just felt like I was living with these lifelong nuisances, is what it felt like. And I thought that those nuisances were either my wild personality or my moral failings or my whimsy or my out of control emotions that were in fact my undiagnosed ADHD. And so while I cannot wait to ask you why it wasn't diagnosed earlier, which I know you have an answer for, but before we do that, can you just tell us what it is? Because it's not just a lack of discipline. It's more than that. And it is real. So can you tell us what it is and that it is real?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So there's so much to know about ADHD. So first of all, yes, it is real. It is a diagnosis that they have researched and treated since the early 1900s, like 1901, I believe, is when they first started looking at it. Yes. And there were different understandings and conceptualizations in terms of why it happened. People thought it was a moral failing at first because of the time. Then they thought it was more of a hyperkinetic thing. It was just the body didn't know how to settle down. There's so many different explanations that have occurred over the century. But when you look at ADHD, it's something that is pretty much, when you look at it, there's three different types of ADHD. There's ADHD inattentive type, which used to be called ADD. It's not a diagnosis that is official anymore. ADHD, predominantly hyperactive, impulsive type, and then ADHD combined type. So to get diagnosed with each of these, you have to have 6 out of the 9 for each area category. It has to cause clinically significant impairment in at least 2 settings, which it means it has to significantly impact you in those settings. And it has to be at least 2 settings. So like daycare and school, or school and home, that kind of stuff, athletics and home. And it has to be present by age 12. So that's the kind of the nutshell. The inattentive type tends to be more common in girls, typically, not all the time, but it's just more common. And these are losing things that you need for tasks, procrastination, being off in your own world. A lot of these girls are missed because they don't cause behavioral problems, because they're just in their own world and they're missing out on important information during a coaching session, during athletics, during school, during conversations, watching a movie or a TV show. Like they're missing out because they're kind of stuck in their own world. And yeah, so they're, and can be very forgetful. So very often just kind of in their own world. That's usually what we see. For the hyperactive impulsive type, we usually see that with boys. And these are the ones that usually get noticed because they cause so many behavioral issues. They are running around constantly. It's like driven by a motor is the official description in the diagnostic manual. They like the Energizer Bunny. They are interrupting conversations. They're raising their hand, if they even raise their hand, to interrupt things. They are sharing, oversharing. They are standing when you're supposed to be sitting. They're like constantly moving and engaging and interactive. And then the combined type is both. So you have to have 12 out of the 18. And so that could be huge. But the thing about ADHD that I always try to emphasize with clients and just online is I see it as a rule out diagnosis. Because it looks like so many things, which is why we see so many people getting diagnosed so late in life. Okay. Because ADHD can look like anxiety. Sure. Because if you're anxious, you're like scanning your environment, you're not fully present, you're missing out on important information, you're forgetful, Mm-hmm. You're kind of on edge. Well, that looks a lot like ADHD. ADHD can look like depression because it affects your concentration and your memory. Both do. You're kind of off in your own world. ADHD can look like learning challenges, like dyslexia. It could look like autism because of sometimes of the social skills, impacts of social skills. I mean, there's so many different areas. Trauma can look like ADHD.
Yeah.
Stress. People going through COVID, lots of people thought they had ADHD during COVID because you're constantly doing things. You're managing all these things. You're being forgetful. You feel scatterbrained. So many different things. So it's one of those diagnoses that's really tricky. And sometimes things can get missed because of that. So, so that's a big part of it. But a big, big part of it is it's a dysregulation issue. So it's an executive functioning dysregulation disorder, which means all the things that our prefrontal cortex manages is executive functioning. And that's impacted by an ADHD diagnosis. So things like organization and planning and emotional regulation, impulse control, working memory, processing speed. There's a lot of stuff that's impacted by ADHD because of the executive functioning impact. So all of those things are going to be impacted. So you can have a super smart kid who's gifted and talented, straight A's, and yes, they can still have ADHD. Mm-hmm. So it's not an IQ thing. It's not an academic thing. It's an executive functioning dysregulation disorder. And that's why so many people are impacted, but in ways sometimes they don't realize because there's so many different criteria that you can meet for it.
Right. Okay. A lot of things. So first of all, when you're talking about the prefrontal cortex and all of the life that happens in our prefrontal cortex, whether it's, you know, organization or I don't know, decision-making, problem solving, motivation. I mean, I don't even know. I'll leave
yes,
the science to you. Certainly.
Yes.
Okay, great. Perfect. Whew. But when you think about all of the things that are happening there, and then you think about a child's prefrontal cortex that is already not fully developed, and then you put this diagnosis on top of it, I would imagine that's a bit of a double whammy.
Oh, totally. Because the prefrontal cortex, the frontal lobe doesn't stop growing until age 25, 26. So you have a kid, a teenager, a college student who doesn't have a fully developed prefrontal cortex. And then if they have ADHD on top of that, that's usually how I describe it. It is a double whammy because you have this underdeveloped prefrontal cortex. That's for every kid until 25. And then if you have ADHD, you have an understimulated prefrontal cortex. So it's lagging behind in that.
I want to talk about that understimulated, because don't you feel like this is a huge misconception that when we think about ADHD and we all are bringing to mind this hyperactive boy, right? My son, I liken him to a bouncy ball. It is like raising a human bouncy ball. God love him. He has so many things right in life. We all want to like come back his place, but when you think about this hyperactivity and then you say an understimulated brain, those things seem to go against each other. So let's talk about what actual dysregulation means. And I know that the inattention part, because I know a lot of people with ADHD, myself included, that can be super hyper-focused. So talk to us about what dysregulation means.
Yes. So that's why it's such an opposite thing, because it doesn't seem to make sense. Okay. So regulation, let's start from a very basic understanding. So regulation of our body, say we go outside and it's 95 degrees and we go outside and we're wearing long johns, sweatsuit, and a hoodie with a wool cap. What is your body going to do? Sweat. Right? Because your body is getting overheated. It's dysregulated. It can't cool off. So the sweat helps it to cool off and bring it back into balance. Otherwise, you can get a heat stroke and pass out. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you eat something that's not good for you, like food poisoning, what does your body do? Try to get rid of it. Diarrhea, throw up, to regulate itself and bring it back to normal functioning. Mm-hmm. Our body's in a constant state of trying to balance things out. So when it comes to our regulation of our emotions and thoughts and behaviors, it's the same thing, that we are constantly in a state of trying to regulate. So a kid doesn't get something that they want and they scream and have a tantrum. And then they like, hug me, mommy, because all's better now. They had this big explosion and now they feel better. Okay. So with ADHD, what's happening is it's because it's a dysregulation disorder. It's a dysregulation of attention, emotions, thoughts, and behaviors.
Right.
Okay. And what that means is when you say understimulated frontal lobe, you have a frontal lobe that's not getting a message. So the message is sent, your mom is telling you, hey, pick up your clothes. But because you have dysregulation of attention, for example, you're not getting the message because your processing speed is also slow, which is typical of ADHD. So then you don't do it. You don't do it. Your mom tells you again, I said, pick up your clothes. What? So now you start doing it, but because your working memory sucks, which is also common at ADHD, you don't remember.
Yeah.
So now you're watching, you know, something on TV and your mom comes in again and says, dude, pick up your clothes. What the heck? Oh, sorry. So your brain is not attentive and engaged and stimulated and working hard enough in those particular areas to get the message, because if you can't even store something, because your working memory, which is 3 to 5 seconds of information, if you can't store something, then you're not going to recall it.
Right.
Because it's not engaged enough. It's understimulated. It's not getting the message until now mom is losing it. And now you're angry and I'm fine. I'll just clean up my room. Well, because now you're in this enticed kind of escalated emotional state. And so now we do it. So then the parent is like, well, he doesn't do things unless I yell. Yeah, but learning can't occur in a state of dysregulation. So they're probably going to do the same thing in the future after school when they know what to expect, because logic and reasoning.
So there's no skill building there. Yeah, wow.
There's no skill building because logic and reasoning can't occur and learning can't occur when you're in a dysregulated emotional state, which is very common with individuals with ADHD. They don't know how to regulate that. And so a big piece of that dysregulation is such a kicker, because they're just like, I don't want to respond that way. I don't want to forget my homework. I don't want to not pay my taxes. You know, is it all these things that they don't want to do, but they can't hold on to the lesson of the feeling they had when they fell behind in their bills, when they got a failing grade because they forgot to study. Like, they don't know how to hold on to that, to maintain that consistency. So inconsistency is the most consistent part of ADHD because of that. So it's that kind of understimulated brain that's not getting the message. And so that's why stimulants or caffeine wakes up the brain and helps them to pay attention. And that's why a lot of individuals, especially like adults and teenagers, when they drink caffeinated beverages, they actually feel more focused, as opposed to a person without ADHD gets jittery.
Right.
Because the stimulant stimulates their brain and wakes it up so that it could focus better.
Right.
That's why the stimulant medication works, because it stimulates the brain so they can remember better, so they can stay consistent, so they can be motivated.
I'm just thinking, you know, it's hard for me to be awakened to this recently. And so I'm such a learner right now. I'm such a sponge, because it is defining so much of not just my life, but my children's lives too. And I was listening to my son the other day, and he's just a delightful human. He has a dimple in his cheek and a twinkle in his eye. And he's a lot of energy, but he's just a honey. I mean, people really enjoy him. So he's talking about how, yeah, my teacher really likes me. She really likes me a lot. Except when I start asking too many questions. And I was thinking about that in relation to his ADHD, with the frame of ADHD. And I was thinking of not getting a message, even when that message is to shut up, you know? So not being able to kind of read a room. We are always telling Blaze, read a room. And that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to him, you know, without the skill building that goes along with, you know. So you mentioned medication. And when I think about compensating. And compensating was a huge part of my life that I didn't know that I was doing. You know, you mentioned COVID, and I'm curious, like, feel free to make this as personal as you want. But for me, it was 2020-ish, you know, it was pandemic and where there was racial reckonings and political upheaval, there was isolation, there was disappointment. Church disappointment was a huge one for me, and it affected me deeply. And it was during that time that I couldn't find any more compensation. It felt like I wore out, and there were these new demands for coping, and I just simply wasn't able to find them anymore. And this, of course, felt terrible to me, but a loving doctor reframed it to me, and she said, "What I see is a lifetime of success of compensating and of compensations. And from the outside, it might look like this is an inability to find any further compensations." And so it looked like it happened really suddenly. But in reality, I just think this is a last straw. Like, this just, all of this kind of felt like a last straw. And all of these compensations that had built up over a lifetime kind of came crashing down. And so I wasn't someone who was overly disruptive in class. I wasn't someone who was getting in trouble. I actually even made decent grades because I liked learning. There were certainly topics that were not interesting to me that were very difficult. Math was very difficult for me. I didn't see a good use for it. But I made decent grades. I was interested. I could focus on the things that I was interested in. And so I think I just flew under radar for a really long time. And so I did have skills. I was compensating. I was doing all of these things. I had accepted, or I had, you know, kind of caught all these cues to get by until I couldn't, until they didn't. And so we did try medication. Now, I am certain that you would say that medication is not a cure-all. That we can't just diagnose this, give a pill, and wipe our hands of it and call it good. Can we talk about that delicate balance of compensations and skill building and medication?
Yes, absolutely. I think, yeah, yes to everything that you said about 2020 being just this disappointment. But also at the same time, being a place where lots of people thrived. My business thrived, my personal life thrived, like lots of things boomed during that time. But it was also because it's like, well, you had nothing else. I didn't have the new movies to watch. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the traveling that I could do. I didn't have the places to go out with family and friends and that kind of stuff. And I think we then look for ways to compensate. So medication, I think people so often think medication for medical diagnoses and issues is, yeah, you know, you have cancer, get cancer treatment. You have diabetes, get, you know, insulin. Like we say that these are necessary things, but then you look at the psychotropic medication for anxiety and depression and ADHD, and it's like, oh no, don't do that. Just pray it away. Yeah. Especially in the Christian community, right? Like, I think that we look at these things like therapy and medication for psychological diagnoses and we'd like poo-poo on it.
Yeah.
And I think that there's still such a stigma for those things. And I think it needs to stop because with medication, and that's with anything, if I see somebody in therapy as a psychologist for anything, ADHD, depression, anxiety, medication is one of the solutions if they choose to do so. However, what we know is that it's not a end-all cure-all, just like anything else. I mean, just like if you had a medical diagnosis, you had high blood pressure and you get medication for hypertension, they're also going to tell you to exercise and eat well and hydrate, right? It's the same thing with psychotropic medication, that medication is one part of the solution. But for ADHD, what is often the trifecta is the therapy or behavior management to teach that individual skills so that they can learn how to remember, how to organize, whatever it is, skill building. If you're in a workplace or school setting, it's also then making sure the person in that environment is understanding, the teacher's understanding, the workplace can make accommodations, whatever it is. And then also the medication, if you choose to, because that can help with regulation of attention, that can help with leveling you out. There's so many college students I've spoken to, for example, who get on medication after working with me in terms of like helping with the skill building, and that find that now they have the skills, but they still, something's missing. And getting on the medication was just like, oh my gosh, I can actually study for my MCATs. I can actually study for my exams and remember because I can focus long enough to hold on to the information. But I don't ever want people to look at medication as just the end all, because you can take it and it's a good band-aid for that situation. But if you're not building any skills, then you get off the medication and you still don't have the skills.
Right.
So I think it should always be done in combination with other things to help with managing all of the symptoms and challenges.
And I would imagine that there would come a time with the skill building and with the practice that perhaps, I never want to speak too broadly because I'm not an expert in anything except being a friend, but that there would come a time that, and now I can take this on an as needed basis. Is that true or false, would you say?
For ADHD, no.
No? Okay.
A couple of reasons why. One, it's not a diagnosis like depression or anxiety that can just be addressed and then you can like go into remission, for example, with depression,
right.
like
yeah.
where you no longer meet criteria for it, right? For ADHD, it's a lifelong condition, yep. lifelong diagnosis in the sense of your brain is not stimulating, it's not getting stimulated in the way that it needs to. It's not regulating that it needs to. So many people find that once they realize they have ADHD, it's an ongoing challenge and an ongoing mission to basically help themselves manage it better. So it doesn't mean you have to continue to suffer with ADHD, but once you learn that, oh, okay, these are the executive function skills that I lack or that I'm not as great at, so how can I build this up? So it's a more intentional thing. So it doesn't mean that, oh, my ADHD then goes away. But it also doesn't mean that you have to continue to suffer with the symptoms right. and the criteria that really keep you bogged down. But you right. can learn how to manage it better so that way it doesn't keep you kind of in a corner and you're not able to be successful.
Right.
So it's not something that you can cure, but it's something that you learn to manage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful. Okay, so speaking of learning to manage it and compensations, are there specific tools that you use? Are there specific things that you put into practice? I'm thinking of this all the time with my family, raising my own kids, because how I am parenting my neurotypical kids is very different from how I might need to help my neurodivergent kids. What are some tips and tricks that you might use?
Absolutely. So what I always tell parents and individuals first is to first identify what areas are you or your child struggling with. All mm-hmm. those executive function skills, doing a checklist, looking at all those different executive function skills, like, okay, they struggle with organization, they struggle with planning, they struggle with working memory, with processing speed, with flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
What are those areas that they struggle with first? And then also looking, what are the areas that they're rocking out? Because there's going to be some strengths, because there's lots of great things about kids with ADHD and individuals with ADHD. They're fun. They have great sense of humor. They have endless energy. They're creative. They are outside the box thinkers. Like there's amazing things about them that make them so wonderful to have in a classroom or the workplace or as a principal, as my kid's principal is. Like they're totally amazing, right? And so I think it's important for that because I don't remember what the exact stat is, but kids with ADHD receive more negative messages than kids without.
Mm.
And so we really want to build them up because ADHD doesn't have to be this life sentence of misery. It's not like that. It's one of my favorite populations to work with actually because of they're just so cool to work with. So once you know that you or your kiddo has ADHD, I always believe in starting with education. Like educate yourself with the right stuff, not with the TikTok stuff.
Yeah.
That could be great and helpful.
Yeah, good point.
But educate them first about what is ADHD truly and how does it show up for you in terms of the negative stuff and how it shows up for you in the positive stuff.
Yeah.
So, and then educating them on these are executive functions. It helps you to execute functions. It's the boss of your brain, it's the frontal lobe. And it helps you to do these things. When you have ADHD, it interrupts that process. So how does that show up? So really starting with education, because why I like to start with that is when people can understand how ADHD shows up for them, then they'll understand why you're doing those strategies, why you're doing those interventions.
Right.
Okay. You get more buy-in, just like several years ago when I discovered I was low in vitamin D. Like, well, why am I low in vitamin D? Oh, well, because you're not spending enough time outside. It was at the time I was working in a hospital and I was like inside all the time. Mm-hmm. So once I realized that, I'm like, oh, more vitamin D. Okay. So what do I need to do? And within 2 weeks, I like shot up my levels because I was now aware of what I had to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So same thing with executive functions and ADHD. So there's a few go-tos. So one of the things that I find individuals, are we talking about any particular age, like with the intervention?
I'll just be selfish and say my 11-year-old boy, and then hopefully people can, yeah.
Okay. So like we're talking about like preteens, teens, right? So one of the areas that I find is a big challenge for lots of ADHD kids is they tend to be sticky and inflexible. Mm-hmm. They decide this is the way things are, and then they don't know how to deviate from it. So that can be one. So flexibility is an executive function skill. It helps you to be adaptable in situations and in relationships so that things don't always have to be the way that you intended. So one of the things that I love to do is telling parents to change plans slightly. Mm-hmm. So for example, if the plan was the family was going to go out to watch movie A and then go eat pizza at place B, but they also wanted to see movie B or movie C, then you can say, hey, and they like burgers. So you're like, hey, I know we really wanted to go see this movie, but hey, this other movie that we really wanted to see is also showing, and then we can eat burgers after. Yeah, let's do it. So you're still doing the preferred activity, but you're slightly changing the plan. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then if they're like, oh, I was really looking forward to pizza. I know, right? And then you do it anyway. You don't harp on it. You don't try to encourage them. You don't try to give a teachable moment pep talk. Uh-huh. You just acknowledge it. Uh-huh. So making small changes in plans over time is one of the best ways I have found to teach flexibility. Because then they start to understand, oh, things change. Mm-hmm. Another big one for flexibility is anticipating potential problems for the future. So, hey, we have your friend's birthday party on Saturday at the pool. So, well, what if the weather is not great and we are not able to go to the pool? We're not able to hang out. What can we do instead? What do you think we can do instead? Or, hey, I know that we were going to do this thing, but what if blah, 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 blah? What can we do instead? And actually having them think about potential solutions to the problem.
Some ownership.
And thinking about outside the box. So that way they can get unstuck early. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. For things like time management, which is a big one for ADHD, because they tend to have a lot of time blindness. And they underestimate how long something takes. And for ADHD, their brain thinks very much now, not now. So if something's not due now, then it's not due.
Right.
So we really want to teach them how to not do that, how to think about like one method is the Pomodoro. And that's an app that they can use on their phones. It means tomato in Italian. Mm. And it's basically a timer. And they can do something for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, however long they can do it. And then they take a quick break for 2 to 3 minutes. Uh-huh. Work for 15 minutes, break for 2 to 3 minutes.
Yes.
Or setting aside like, okay, I don't want to read 100 pages over the next month. Well, you don't. We can look at 100 pages divided by 30 days. And we divide up and we read 3.5 pages a day. So chunking things down and creating shorter, smaller deadlines actually helps with time management and helps them manage themselves better. So that way they're not waiting to the last minute, which often is the case.
It's also really good for, I don't know if this would be considered organization, but something that's hard for me as well is tasks that I find boring. So I don't want to clean. Although I love a clean house, I love the way organization feels and why that feeling doesn't trump my lack of desire to do it. I can't know, but it doesn't. And so I will put it off, put it off, put it off. But I want to raise really functional kids. And so that's helped me be a good role model or whatever. And something that's working for our family is saying, okay, you have to pick up 15 things, you know, go pick up 10 items of clothing out of the laundry room and fold them and put away. And that feels manageable. That feels okay. That doesn't feel like this insurmountable, you know, task that is just this overarching, go clean your room. Oh my goodness, where do I even start? So I love right. that. And that's working at home too. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and what you mentioned too, Allison, is that's task initiation. That's a huge one for ADHD.
Yes,
task initiation is getting started and motivation. Yes. Because I read in several articles that task initiation feels physically painful for an ADHD person.
Yes.
Like it just hurts to get stuff started. So breaking it down and chunking it is a great one. But also like the one thing that I use is this one thing. Okay, I don't want to clean the pile of dishes because again, it seems overwhelming. So I'll just wash the dishes or I'll just load the glasses yeah. or I'll just load the yeah. silverware. And what happens is as you start a task, motivation follows. Or I'll just wash one load of laundry every day. Or I'll just wipe down the countertop. Like something you just starting. Right. Because if you can just start, the motivation follows afterwards. And it can be very helpful. Or it can just build confidence knowing that, okay, well, I didn't do all of it, but I did this one thing. And that's yeah. more than I did
yeah.
before.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I was thinking about the lack of initiation, I can be so hard on myself about that, you know, yeah. because it doesn't feel like something that I'm contending with in my brain. It feels like we keep saying this. It feels like a moral failing. It feels like I'm lazy. It feels yes. like I'm less than. So ADHD presents a lot of ways with me, but some of the ones that I hate the most are binge eating, overwhelm, fatigue, lack of motivation, and emotional regulation. And I can be really, really hard on myself about those things. And so I love that you talk about that we're creative problem solvers. I love that you talk about how much fun we are to be around. I love, you know, that you have this whole other reframe that says, this is my favorite patient. This is my favorite client. Or that it makes your principal that much more effective as a principal. What a lovely way to talk about it. Do you mind addressing in your lovely, nurturing, professional, expert way, do you mind addressing some of the ways that we're hard on ourselves? What do you have to say about that?
So like I said earlier, right? ADHD kid receives more negative messages than a neurotypical kid because they're speaking out of turn. They're interrupting. They're forgetful again. How did you forget your shoes on the way to school? Like there is like constant reminders. They feel like they're always getting in trouble compared to other students or other kids in the family. So it starts to, it's kind of like, well, how do they not feel shame?
Yeah.
Because I'm always messing up. The parents are always mad at me. The teachers are always on my case. Friends are always telling them that this. And they tend to be, there's a couple things why this is important, what you just mentioned. One is kids with ADHD tend to be 2 to 3 years more developmentally immature than their same age peers. Mm-hmm. So they are kind of like social and emotional wise, they kind of lag behind. So like the whole reading the room, they might not be able to do that.
Right.
So an 11-year-old might be acting like an 8, 9-year-old. And that's why they prefer the younger friends or older friends because they feel like the little brother or little sister. And so a lot of kids with ADHD and individuals with ADHD tend to have more depression and anxiety because of that shame. Because, man, I know better. How did I forget this again? How did I forget to pay my bill? How did I forget to turn in my homework? You know, and also because of that, sometimes the immaturity at a young age, they tend to have a hard time making friends or keeping. They might make friends really easily, but they have a hard time keeping them because they say things out of turn, because they're impulsive and they say something rude, because they are sensitive to rejection and they misperceive or words or an action. So a lot of that shame is so inherent in basically an ADHD diagnosis.
Yeah.
Because they misperceive a lot of things. And yeah. because some of them are very perceptive, but they don't like what they're perceiving. Mm. So they sense that you're mad at them, but you don't want to tell your kids you're mad and disappointed. So then you're like, no, we're fine. But they perceive something. So they're like, we're not fine.
Yeah.
And so that they're constantly scanning the room, especially if they have ADHD and anxiety, which can happen. And so they're constantly scanning and they're hypervigilant and they're always noticing what people are doing and what they're saying and what they're not saying. And is this person giving me the silent treatment? And did they not include me in the group text? And all these different things. Why did the teacher talk to me that way? Like there's this constant stuff going on in their head and they have a hard time shutting off their brain anyway.
Yes.
So yeah, shame is going to be naturally a common occurrence because their brain is constantly thinking all the time and they're stewing over something they said or didn't say or did or someone didn't do. And so a lot of that shame is going to be a natural part of it because of that. And so that's why we as spouses, partners, adults, parents, teachers don't want to feed more into it. And that's why I speak so much on my page about on Instagram about speaking to the need behind the behavior rather than the behavior. Because if we speak and punish and react to the behavior, then of course there's going to be shame that develops. But instead, if we can speak to the need or the intention behind the behavior. So like, for example, I don't believe people are lazy. Yeah. I feel very strongly about not using that word. It's such a big label. And it's like, once you identify with being lazy, well, where do you go from there? Because it's now part of your identity.
Right.
And that's not your identity. That's a behavior. Mm-hmm. What is behind the behavior of what appears to be laziness? Mm. Well, it's probably poor task initiation. That's an executive function skill. Maybe it's poor time management. That's an executive function skill. Maybe it's not having the tools or the skills needed to do the task that you're asking, like asking a kid to clean their room. How the heck do you clean a room? Like, what do you do when your room is a train wreck? Like, right. So all of these things, maybe it's the overwhelm, like, and all of those things. And overwhelm is a big part of ADHD because remember, it's a dysregulation disorder. So if you are bombarded by your thoughts and bombarded by feelings and tasks, and you don't even know where to start and how to get it done, yeah, of course you're going to feel overwhelmed. So then you just do nothing.
Right. Yes.
It's a great escape. It's a great coping strategy because then I don't have to deal with it. But the problem with that is that it's still not getting done. And now you feel shame and now you feel lazy.
Right. And so what you do, Dr. Lockhart, is you play really addictive games on your phone or you scroll TikTok. Which,
right.
by
or
the way,
you overeat.
Yes, yes. Now, you've told us that we're not supposed to be getting our education from TikTok. Where do we get our education besides from you, of course? Everyone, please go follow Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart. On Instagram is my favorite place to follow. She has reels, she has series, she has so many engaging ways to connect and learn. And then I just feel like the comments section is always a really healthy collective place where people are engaging. And so I just, please go follow Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart. But where should we be getting our information if it's not this bombardment that we're getting on TikTok?
Yes. So I think there's so much good that has come out of social media. I don't see it as all negative, right? There is some great recipes and stuff that I've engaged in and really healthy, really good stuff on TikTok. That's just the people that I follow. Okay. And I think that's going to be intentional. If you're going to follow people on TikTok and Instagram, be intentional about who you follow and who
advice.
You engage with. Okay.
Thank
that's
you.
That's mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. But I think you can find really good stuff when you can look and follow the right people and the right content. So if there's people that you like, if you decide you come to my page and you like it, and then look to see who I'm following and look and go to their pages. So
great advice.
Look to the people that you already follow and see like, okay, I really like this person's message. They're consistent. They're uplifting. They're drama-free. That's what my page is all about. And who are they following? Who do they get their information about from? Who do they support? And I think that's a great start because it's going to be different for everybody based on this position in life that you are in. I think a big part of it is also following people who do a lot of research on executive functioning. So one of my favorites, and she and I have become besties, is Dr. Rebecca Brandstetter. Mm. And She has written one of my favorite books that I read years ago, The Conscious Parent's Guide to Executive Functioning Disorders.
Okay.
You can find it on Amazon. So again, it's Dr. Rebecca Brandstetter, The Conscious Parent's Guide to Executive Functioning Disorders. Anything from Dr. Russell Barkley. He does a lot on ADHD. There's a YouTuber that I really like. The page is called How to ADHD. Mm-hmm. And she has great things for, as an adult with ADHD. Just so there's some really, really good things I would say start there. And one of the pages that or websites that I review their articles is the Very Well Family or Very Well Mind. And if you go online, you can look up anything related to ADHD or executive functioning. And there are great articles written by professionals and reviewed by licensed professionals. Yes, so that's a yes. really great, legit resource. Yeah. So I think if you're going to get resources, get them from legit resources. And then also those articles have links to articles and research based on those articles. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Thank you so much. Well, this is such a wide topic. I mean, I know that we, you know, could go off on a million different tangents on any of the things that we brought up today. So I appreciate this overarching umbrella. I hope that you will come back either maybe again on this topic to dive deeper into something, or we can just hit something else that you're an expert in, because there's just so much to choose from. Do you mind closing us with something that you're hopeful for?
That's a good question. Something that I'm hopeful for. I think that parents would stop beating themselves up thinking mm-hmm. that they have to get parenting right and perfect. Mm-hmm. And that if they do everything right, that their kid will have an easy, happy life without misery. there is no one magic formula. And I'm tired of parents beating themselves up thinking that if they follow this one parenting guru, if they follow this one thing, that everything will be fine and it'll be easier.
Yeah.
And that's not the way life or parenting mm-hmm. works. Mm-hmm. I think that we can do good enough and love and delight in our kids and be there for them and support them. And that's the best that we can do.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm hopeful for, that parents will stop putting so much pressure on themselves to do everything perfectly, because it's not possible. And it's an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah.
And I'm telling myself this as well too, because sometimes sure. I fall into that same trap. Like, oh my gosh, we have all these things to do. And what if we don't show up to the track meet for our kids? Will they be devastated? Will they look back on their life and say, my mom was not there? You know, like, like we can't do all the things. And so I think that's what I'm hopeful for, is parents can just give themselves a little bit of a break and maybe do less.
I like it. And the power of a good apology, man. Kids are so forgiving
oh, yeah.
and wonderful and understanding. Repair, repair, repair. Thank you so much for that.
Absolutely.
And you know, we are not going to pave a perfect way. And why would we even want to? Because we learn the most from the lessons we would never choose. So life is going to be lifey. Thank you
yes.
so much. I appreciate your wisdom. And like I said, in the beginning, there's just such a nurturing way about your wisdom. A lot of people can be smart on a topic, but sometimes there's a chilliness that can go along with being really, really smart. And so I just appreciate your warmth and your nurture and non-judgment. I am really, really grateful for the encouragement that you give both here to listeners, but mostly on your own platforms online. Guys, please go follow. You will not be disappointed. Thank you, Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart. Happy spring. Hello, Beefinator. How are you?
Hi, Beefy Beefy. I'm great. You?
I'm good. I am going to try to stay focused. I'm joking. This little segment about ADHD, Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart was back, and she's such a fan mm-hmm. favorite. So expert on so many things, and it was really fun to pick her brain about ADHD. As you know, my world has been rocked by this diagnosis as I read about myself.
Yeah, so here's the truth. When you first told me that you were ADHD, I was... I guess suspicious because it's so confusing to me, because there's no one that can hyperfocus like you do. Like when you are into something, you are into it. Like I have seen you puzzle, and I am here to tell the people that you are not leaving that table until you find that piece right from the middle. And just in your work and everything that you're passionate about, right? You have like tremendous focus. But obviously, yeah, as you know, you've had to teach me that it's really more about waking up a sleepy brain so that it can regulate. It's just more about like attention, right? Rather than regulation, or it isn't so much about attention. It's about regulation. So that made it make a lot more sense, but it's confusing.
It is confusing because if you, Dr. Lockhart and I were talking about the stereotypical, you know, like Blaze being a human bouncy ball. Like, I think that's the image that comes into everyone's mind when really it can look a lot of different ways. And a lot of women were flying under the radar as students. Right. And, you know, there have been a lot of pluses that I've been able to help my family. So if task initiation is a really hard thing for me when it comes to house cleaning or any chore I don't want to do, I don't find interesting.
Right.
Because that's what it is, right? Like the things that you find interesting, yes, I can hyper-focus on that.
Right.
But the things that I don't find interesting in that task initiation and then just feeling overwhelmed by them all and then whatever, you know, there are these little tools that I've been able just through some compensation of telling my kids like, okay, we are going to clean for 2 minutes. We're going to do it for 2 minutes. Well, guess what? There's seven people in the house.
Right.
And if everybody is cleaning for 2 minutes, like we can get a lot of things done.
I have seen that in practice and it is remarkable.
But that task initiation and having ways around that. And so, you know, just having compensation and then when compensations fail, you know, there's a lot of blame and shame that go into it. There's a lot of successes and wins. A lot of the things that I like about myself are, I think sensitivity is my superpower. Mm-hmm. I love being a creative person.
Right.
And yet there's a lot of blame and shame that goes along with it too. So just like anything else, it's just a delicate little balance.
Right. Right.
Okay. So I have some of these little markers that I thought, and it's so dumb because I'm reading them and I'm like, how is, and I think some of them are like everyone would answer yes to all of these. But for me, I cannot fathom someone not identifying with every single one of them. So I'm going to read some of them to you and you're going to tell me neurotypically how you're answering these questions. Okay.
Okay. I'll do my best.
So do you daydream, distract, and get easily bored while reading or listening or in meetings?
I do not. I would say that those are actually all places where I focus the best, right? Because there's something happening in front of me that needs my attention and can help me drown out other noise. How about
you? Fascinating. This is happening in real time. Do you know how I will send you a text and I will be, and you will like already be answering me. And I'm like, you are the fastest reader known to man. Do you know what I actually think's happening? I have to read everything three times.
Oh, just to focus on it. Cause you're not all the way focused the first time.
I think that, I'm just figuring this out.
We do talk about that all the time. That's hilarious.
35 years in, beef. Well, I guess we weren't sending texts as 8-year-olds, but okay. Let's see. Is it hard to plan? People that know me are cackling right now. Is it hard to plan ahead and prioritize? Would you rather just wing it? Do you often forget about appointments?
Okay. So this is a little bit, 100,000% no, because I plan and have a list and never still, because if I'm still, then therefore think I have space to plan something. So I don't know that that's a strength of mine, that I am not that way, but I am not that way.
It is not a strength. I could not be any more that way. I could not be any more. If people are like, hey, do you want to have a phone date? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, is Thursday good? And I'm like, yeah, probably. And they're like, what time? I'm like, never mind.
Just forget it. Call the whole thing
no,
off.
No, I can't. So, wow. Okay. Will hours pass you by whilst you are deeply focused on browsing or your favorite app?
Okay. So an hour could pass me by, not 6 hours. Like, I don't think that I have a super healthy relationship with the screens and whatnot, but I don't think it's like disrupts my life. Like, I think it's probably just a bad habit, but not something that is a big distraction in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I can be scrolling and I can be actively saying to myself, tomorrow Allison is going to be so sad at tonight, Allison.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's really sad at you right now because it's 4 a.m.
You're like, I don't care. I'll talk to her tomorrow. She's not here right now.
Okay. Do you have trouble with a regular bedtime routine or getting enough sleep?
I do not. I really, really like my bedtime.
Yes, you do.
And I am that gets me there. And you know that we have that all the time too, because you do your best thinking late and reach out about different things. And then I usually like have my regimented like 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. when I'm like trying to think through things before I compartmentalize to something else. And, but it's all there. Like you do it at night. I'm there when I wake up, when you're ready to wake up or do the next thing, my response is there. It works.
It does. Right? It does work. And I'm really grateful for your grace, but there is a lot of times because I'm needy and demanding that I want my beef right then. So I am not going to pretend like that does not bother me. You being all regimented and stuff. No. Okay. I'm joking. Are you a perfectionist when working on or creating something that you care about?
That's a big question. I mean, I think, I don't know really what perfectionist means, but I think I take a lot of pride in my work and wanting to make sure that it's right. I guess I have the ability to say like, I will be a perfectionist for X amount of time. And then at that time it needs to be all done because I need to go do something else. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's where like a line can be drawn. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think? What do you do?
I think we're both actually kind of perfectionists. I think that's maybe one that we have a little bit in common. But yes, I can hyperfixate and hyperfocus and really kind of obsess about some details that if I really care about it and it feels important, I can.
Right, and I like labor. That's a strength to me, right? Because you're super passionate, and again, like when you have that focus on something that you're passionate about, like you're very, very committed to thinking about that and seeing it through. And so I love that.
Thank you. Do you act impulsively and react quickly without reflecting?
No. Right? No.
No.
Right? No.
You are just as steady and as reasonable as they come. And I love it so much. Mm-hmm. I think Glennon Doyle has this little metaphor of, and I think at the time it was about her husband, but he's like holding this little kite handle and she's like this little whipping kite just being jostled about by the wind. And she's so delighted that he was steady and would just kind of marvel at what she was going to do next and which direction it was going to take. Always a surprise.
Right.
And they were admiring each other. Yeah.
Yes. I absolutely like admire to the extent of like envy of your creativity. And the way that I'm actually working on something right now for work where I'm talking about, we need to spend more time just in the like creative part before we start doing the like product part. Because I want to just jump all over that and like do the doing and the execution of the thing rather than just like sitting and brainstorming and being creative. And that's a super strength of yours.
Thank you. Okay. Two more. Does it seem you never get around? We kind of talked about this one already, actually. Does it seem you never get around to certain important activities like paperwork or tidying or planning?
I mean, I don't want to do paperwork or tidying. Planning, yeah. I'm all about. But I don't think I put them off to like an unhealthy place.
Yeah. Right? Procrastination is a huge problem for me. Mm. Okay. Our ideas. An amazing connected mesh in your head, but hard to put in order sometimes?
I think I kind of think in outline format.
I was just going to say,
I think that's a no.
Yeah. As a lawyer, I feel like you are like really a linear thinker. I have always been so impressed how I can come to you with like an idea, whether it's an idea I'm excited about or an emotion I'm kind of overwhelmed by, and you can bring it down to something really concise. Because to me, it's a lot of like swirling things that might be in harmony or might be at odds but like it's a lot of things and you're able to say this, it might be one sentence and it might be only 10 words. And I'm so admiring of your ability to summarize with so much intuition and wisdom. It's so good.
Thank you. That's really nice. But I also want you to give yourself some credit for, like, to me, that's like what you do in interviews, right? Like you can take this big topic and all these thoughts and you know the right questions to draw, you know, interesting responses to your listeners and continue the conversation. So that to me, that is a very similar skill that you do very, very well.
You have one of the things that I'll be talking to you about something and I'll be saying, well, it's kind of like when you're buying shoes and you put your foot on that whatever. And you are always like, I don't know how we just got there, but you are so right.
The ability to nail a metaphor that is like all kinds of out of left field to my brain. Like I wish I could have a concrete example right now. But I know. Like you will take something super abstract and make it super concrete. But we're like talking about like monkeys and bubblegum somehow, like the way those two interact. And I'm like, yes, it is exactly like that. Yep. That happens all the time.
I love it so much. I'm just glad that God partnered us all up, Beef. I'm grateful for your brain and the way that it works. And thank you for loving mine.
Right back at you. I do not want you to be too hard on yourself about the way that some of these things present themselves in your life, because there is so much creativity and so much just thoughtfulness that you bring to the world with your very special brain. And we are all grateful.
Thanks, Beefy. Love you. Love you. Make it better. Bye.
I am so, so grateful for you, listener. If you liked this episode, could you please do me a favor and hit subscribe and leave a review? It really helps the show grow, and I would be so appreciative. Thank you so much to our guests who share their gifts so generously with us, and a special thank you to Taylor Schroll, who does so much behind the scenes to make the show great. If it weren't for him, I would still be in my closet with my iPhone. You can follow along at Forte Catholic as well. That's Taylor's show where I show up now and again. And to keep up more regularly, please follow along on Instagram at Allison M. Sully or TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. See you next week.
Today's show was a production of Allison Sullivan in conjunction with the Forte Catholic Podcast Network. For more great Catholic podcasts, head on over to fortecatholic.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.